Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, today's the third Monday of the month. And can you believe we're already in the second half of this year? This is really scary. I just can't believe it. But the third Monday of the month is where we explore career and business strategies. And we look at work-life balance and creating alternative lifestyle opportunities. Building your work around your lifestyle instead of the other way around. And today we're going to explore how you can increase your bottom line without working more hours. I'm very pleased to have business and marketing consultant Amy Harcourt with me, and I'll introduce her properly in just one moment. And we'll end today's show with dream activist and coach Joyce Chapman. She'll answer your questions, and today we're looking at how to pick yourself up and move forward when the path you've been following suddenly falls away. Happens to all of us. Unfortunately, sometimes that's a good thing. And she's going to tell us how we can make a U-turn or we can get out of that black hole successfully. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Amy Harcourt. She's been a marketing and business consultant and the owner of Definitive Marketing for the past 11 years. She brings 25 years of marketing experience to the table. And she works with startups and mature companies, as well as nonprofits and large corporations. Clients have included University of Michigan, General Motors, and Toyota Motor Sales. Amy Harcourt, welcome to the show. And boy, could Toyota Motor use your help right now.
Isn't that true? Pleasure to be here, Vicki. Thank you for having me.
Well, I came across your work, Amy. One day I received an article in my inbox. It was talking about hourly rates versus value-driven pricing. And I thought, boy, this lady is spot on. And we managed to connect, and here you are today. But before we talk about today's topic, I want to always just share a little of our guests' backgrounds with listeners so that they know where they come from and that they know what they're talking about. You were in the corporate world for a long time. You've been in this business for 25 years total, 11 years as a self-employed person.
Yes.
Why did you give up the corporate route? What made you want to become a business owner?
It's a great question, Vicki. I actually come from a family of entrepreneurs, and I remember being young and having my grandfather, who was an entrepreneur, say, always work for yourself. And for so many years, I was so happy working in the corporate world, I never even thought about working for myself. And then I began to think about it maybe 13, 14 years ago, and the timing wasn't quite right, but my last full-time corporate gig was working for an internet marketing company. We were an internet media company at the rise of .com, and I had a number of friends starting to ask me about the internet and websites and interactive marketing. And I was thick in that at the time, and I realized, wow, this could really be a way that I could go out on my own as a marketing consultant, taking all those years of traditional marketing, merging it with everything I had learned within two very short years in terms of interactive, you know, internet-based marketing, and how to, you know, really, you know, balance and merge the two.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really what motivated me to go out on my own. There was a real market need. And finally, you know, I realized, this is what I would do and enjoy doing on my own. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
Very good. Now, there was, that whole dot-com situation did create a huge amount of opportunity, but there were also a lot of failures during that time, as any time.
Yeah.
But more so then. What are some of the attributes or some of the skills you attribute to your success as a business owner?
Oh, that's such a wonderful question. I have this unusual combination of, I'm really able to see the very big picture. I'm visionary. I'm very conceptual. I'm highly strategic, so sort of big picture thinking. Yet at the same time, I'm really detail-oriented and very organized and really like to roll up my sleeves and get things done. So that balance as a consultant of doing both over the years, I think, really served me well. And I'm very curious by nature and a problem solver, so I love nothing more than to ask questions and probe and gather, you know, information
mm-hmm.
to figure out what's the best path from here to there. And there was an enormous need for that when there was so much money in the market funding not just really good ideas, but some really bad ideas.
Right.
Remember that?
Oh, so, I remember.
And I bumped up against some of those. And in some cases, I was really able to help entrepreneurs who had an idea but hadn't really thought through, wow, does this have legs? You know, so I really helped them figure out, oh, maybe it's not this, but it's that.
Right.
And I think that served me and served them quite well.
Right. So you take people far beyond that, well, my friends all think this is a great idea.
Exactly. But are there more than three of them in the whole marketplace?
I'm always interested about the real story behind entrepreneurism, because we all have challenges, whether people will admit to them or not.
Yeah.
In the beginning, when you was beginning your business 11 years ago, what were some of the challenges that you ran into, Amy?
I think the biggest challenge I first hit was I was fired by my first big client.
Oh.
I know, ouch.
Yeah, talk about a dent in the ego and the confidence.
Exactly. I went out on my own. This was the first company to hire me, and then the company I was leaving also retained my services, as well as a couple other, you know, so like I hit the ground really running with a couple of wonderful clients. And this particular one, I was so excited about working with them, and we were moving along. And it was only in hindsight that I really realized what happened, and it boiled down to the president of the company was, it was not a high-tech company. It was a service-based business. President, though, was really high-tech. He loved all the gadgets. You know, he was the first with, you know, a fancy PDA and all of that.
Right, right.
His vice president, though, was not. She was really more in the business on the softer side, the people side. However, she didn't want that to be known. You know, I think she was embarrassed about it. So we would be moving along, and her knowledge and her participation began to lag. And it wasn't until it was too late that I really realized what was going on, you know, that she was missing things. For instance, she didn't know how to open attachments in email.
Wow.
Or, you know, some simple things. But again, this was, you know, 10, 11 years ago.
Not too
A lot of them didn't know how to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, not too many people were really active.
Then. Right,
yeah.
So unfortunately, things, it just disintegrated. I got canned. It was only in the aftermath that I went back and assessed and realized, oh, that's what I could have done better. And my greatest lesson from that was always, always check in with your client. Stay close, not in a patronizing way, but, making sure you're just always on the same page, that you're sharing mutual understanding, that you're not. I was too far ahead of her and didn't know. I was so green that I didn't know I had left her.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have really helped her along in a way that would have been very empowering to her.
Hmm. But what a valuable lesson for you, and thankfully, right up front, you get it out the way quickly.
Yes. Right, exactly. But exactly. But it was initially, I remember when it happened, I got off the phone and I sat there and cried. I cried. It was such a difficult thing. But yes, I learned huge lessons from it.
Hmm. And what was it that surprised you the most about being self-employed when you first began?
How much I loved it. And how easy it was for me to be really self-directed. Actually, here was the biggest surprise, is for the first time in my life, I worked less and made more. And that will sound crazy because most entrepreneurs will tell you the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You go into business for yourself, you never know when to, you know, close the office, you're working all the time and you're constantly scrambling to make money. I made more and worked less, actually. And here's why, because for years, and I spent 14, 15 years in the corporate world managing marketing and sales departments. And so I put in very, very long hours. So I would be at the office very early until very late, always feeling like I was setting an example for my team. What would happen is I would end up sort of making more work for myself and not following my own natural rhythms of when I'm super productive at 6 a.m.
Mm.
Not so productive at 4 p.m.
Right.
Better for me at 4 p.m. to go out and ride my bike. And then come back and get to work at 8 p.m. and
right.
put in a couple hours.
Right.
So that was a huge lesson that I didn't, it was a surprise that I had not anticipated in any way that I would actually be so much more productive on my own and be able to produce more with less work.
Mm. Well, it sounds as though it's been a really good move for you.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think is the best thing about being self-employed?
Oh, it's probably the people I meet along the way. I love people, and every company I ever worked for, we always sort of formed a little family. I worked for smaller companies, and we always formed a family. But on my own, I get to form those relationships with lots of different companies, and they morph and evolve over time. I would say the very best part of all the relationships I've been able to develop and really enjoy over the years.
Mm, sounds good. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got a couple of articles here that you've written, and I want to talk about the topics of these. We're looking at hourly rates. You could be making so much more. And Amy's going to share her view on value-driven pricing. And we'll also, before the end of the show, talk about how to write winning proposals and getting more yeses. I know so many people who fail on that proposal level. So please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Amy Harcourt of Definitive Marketing. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150. Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Do you know someone who flips out over the tiniest things for no apparent reason? Overreacting is one of the most common and destructive patterns in personal and business relationships. Dr. Judith Siegel joins Vicky to review new research that's changing the way therapists view emotional regulation. We'll discuss important skills for coping with intense and overwhelming emotions and share how we can avoid overreacting with withdrawing or lashing out. Join us next Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We are on the third Monday of the month, and that means we're looking at career and business strategies and work-life balance, etc. today. But we are focusing today on how to make more money by hopefully doing less work. my guest is Amy Harcourt. She's a business and marketing consultant. She started her own firm, her own marketing firm, 11 years ago called Definitive Marketing. And I said at the top of the hour, I came across Amy's work by, I read an article that she wrote and I looked at a couple more and I thought, yes, she really knows her stuff. So let's have her on the show and share some of this information. And one of the things, I wanted to start off, Amy, with hourly rates versus value-driven pricing. You say the title of your article was Hourly Rates, You Could Be Making So Much More. And you say that simply changing from an hourly to a value-driven fee structure will raise your revenues and your clients' loyalty. And you say you guarantee that. So let's first of all talk about why so many consultants go in on an hourly basis. Where did that originate?
It's a good question. I'm not sure where it originated because it's been the case for so long. There are so many professions, lawyers, often designers, developers, so many professions charge by the hour. And I think the reason it has really stuck is for the provider, for the vendor, the consultant, the attorney, whatnot, it's much more comfortable. If I just bill by the hour, I know that every hour I put into this, I'm going to make X. Mm-hmm. And they think that their clients are going to be happier with that because then their clients go in knowing I'm paying this for every hour. So that could be why the model has really stuck and many people are afraid to move off of it.
Mm. Now, you've been in business for 11 years. You say that you've had many clients ask you to quote an hourly rate. You've been even pushed to quote an hourly rate. And you've always declined, and you go by what you call value-driven pricing. So let's look at what you mean by value-driven pricing, first of all.
Yes. Value-driven pricing is, when you think about it, fees that are based on value, they're based on the value of the work versus the amount of time that you put into the work. So one of the reasons, for instance, that it makes sense to look more at that, and value-driven pricing can be organized in a number of different ways. It can be project-based. It can be based on a package of, you know, services and products. It can be retainer or monthly-based. You know, there's lots of different ways to slice it, but it's not based on, I'm going to charge you for the amount of time I put into this. And there's a number of reasons, but the leading reason is this, that you want to reward your clients and you don't want to punish them. And what I mean by that is, often, like I've had many examples of where I'll do very similar work for, let's say, client A and client B. And let's say client A, it takes me much more time to complete the work than it does for client B for, like, unforeseen but really legitimate reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Why then, and let's say A and B, both of those clients receive the exact same amount of value. And what I mean by that is, they have the same level of satisfaction, solved the same kind of business problem, they were able to advance at the same rate, same value. Why would A pay more than B? That sort of, you know, punishes one client over another. And, you know, and that's what happens with the time-based model. It either punishes one or rewards another. And what your clients really care about is the value you deliver, not the amount of time that you put into it.
Right, right. Now, let's go back to this a bit, because I think this is really the critical difference between hourly and value-driven pricing. And if you are a consultant and you do not scope your project well, you can get really screwed by issuing value-driven pricing. And I think that's why so many tend to do the hourly rate, because they want to CYA.
Exactly.
But in the end, they end up shooting themselves in the foot. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really the key, and it's also the key to how you write really good proposals, is you need to really do your work up front before you ever begin the engagement with the client. And what I mean by that is you really need to understand, what is it that the client is looking for, not just the what, like, I want you to do this, but what are the underlying reasons why? And then really scoping out what's involved in the project. And I always recommend break it down into pieces so that you're not just saying, this big project, I'm going to charge you this flat rate. Mm-hmm. I often will break things down into phases or individual deliverables that I can really spec out, you know, in detail. Or I might give a price range for those individual pieces. And it's also really a good idea in your proposal to lay out, here are the underlying assumptions for delivering this at this rate. If we go outside of these assumptions for any reason, that goes outside of the scope of work, and I will need to quote additional fees, you know, to you know, address those.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of ways to make sure that you don't get screwed. You just need to do that on the front end.
Absolutely. And I think that time spent up front is critical. A lot of people want to rush and get into the project and, you know, get the contract signed. But if you don't have your project scoped so that you and your client both understand the value here and the outcome, that's where we get into scope creep and issues with that. And also, one of the points you make in the article, and I think this is also very valid, is that by limiting yourself to an hourly rate, you also limit the amount of money that you can make. Talk about that a little, if you would.
Yeah. If you're selling a service, you're selling your expertise, there's only so much time in the day that you could actually sell. So you're limited by the number of billable hours. So there's a ceiling to what you can, you know, what you can charge. Then let's say, you know, you could hire freelancers and others that you could bill by the hourly, but then, you know, you're going to be billing their rate through it, you know, at a lower cost. So you're just limited by 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The other reason, too, is the only way then for someone billing hourly to increase their earnings is to increase that hourly rate. Try to do that with a client that's been paying X, mm-hmm. and then you want to raise it to Y. It's so difficult to do. And this is another reason why I'm really against this hourly rate, is because you then become a commodity. It becomes so easy for a client to price shop and to compare you to everybody else in your field without really understanding the subtle differences. Like, why are you charging 10, 20, 30% more than somebody else?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a danger there that the client will see you, think they're comparing oranges with oranges, but if you are on an hourly rate, but that value perspective has to come out, because you may be able to do something twice as quickly as somebody else and
yet
do a much better job.
And shouldn't you be rewarded if you're that efficient and that good at what you do? And you're going to get better as your career advances. You know, the more you do what you do well, the better you get. Shouldn't you be rewarded for that? And shouldn't your clients pay for the value that they receive? And remember, they define the value. This whole pricing structure, even though we're talking about it from the perspective of the practitioner and how it's really advantageous, you can make so much money and not work more, truth is it's really client-centric.
Yes.
At its core is talk to your prospective client, ask questions, really understand what are they looking for, what problem are you trying to solve, what opportunity are you trying to seize, and then everything gets built around that. And what you're really doing is delivering value. I want my clients to be excited when they write a check to me.
Yeah, and you say, you give the advice right here in the article, abolish your hourly rate immediately.
I know. So I get a lot of flack for that.
You do. I saw some of the comments that came through, but also a lot of people agreed with you, and people who've been in business for a long time. I certainly agree with you. But why abolish it immediately? What if I've been working with a client for, say, 5 years? How do I approach the situation? Hey, you know what? I'm not charging you an hourly rate anymore. I'm moving to a value-driven price. How do you approach that with your client?
Yeah, I should clarify when I say abolish, it's from this point forward. So the easy thing is I'm going to change, and every new person that I bring on board, I'm going to do this. But I do think having the conversation with your clients and saying, I've always priced things this way. I've been introduced to this new idea, this new way of thinking. And here's how it benefits you. Here's how it benefits me. Let's have a conversation and see if that pricing model makes sense for our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If it doesn't, then don't change it.
Right.
Okay, so when I say abolish, it's like abolish, change your strategy for all new clients, and then work with existing clients to see if they want to make that change with you. But I wouldn't force them to.
Right.
Especially if they've been working with you for, you know, years and you have a great relationship.
Right. And you say that they really do care about your output, not your time. So if I'm, let's say that I was a personal trainer or a massage therapist or something, how would I switch from an hourly to a value-driven package with them? What sort of things would I be looking at?
Well, the best thing to do is to sit down and talk with them. And I just recently did this work with a client who is a personal trainer. And personal training is a classic example of it's this amount of money per session. So what she's really begun to do is do much more discovery up front in talking with her clients about really what are the underlying goals. Because often it isn't just like, you know, I just want to lose 10 pounds or get ready for that next 10K. They're usually, sort of more important reasons. So understanding the why, not just the what do you want to do. And then looking at, like in the case of the personal trainer, looking at what are all the different services that I provide, not just that time in the gym, but what are all the other things that I've been supplying essentially for free, all the ways I think about my client and plan this week's workout and nutrition advice and, you know, whatnot. Look at all of those and figure out a way to package those things together, come up with a fee or maybe even several packages and different, you know, levels or layers of pricing and introduce those to your client.
One thing you talk about a lot in your work is how I will measure if this is successful. Because obviously if the client's keeping you on retainer and, you know, there's no certain number of hours quoted or whatever, how are we measuring success?
That question to your client is one of the very best questions you could ever ask. And I like to ask it up front, and then you check in over time. One of the best questions is, how will we know when we're being successful? And I intentionally used we versus how will you know if I'm being successful? This is a partnership. We're working together. I'm in service to you, but this is really a collaborative effort to advance, you know, objectives forward. So how will we know if we're being successful? And the client will tell you. And it goes right back to, well, what are your objectives? In a business, let's say the client is a corporation, their goals may be revenue-driven, profitability, turnover, employee morale, whatever it is, but those are often quantifiable objectives. And if it's, you know, more like in the personal training situation, you know, again, it could be, you know, quantifiable, but it's working with your client to determine what makes for success.
Right.
And then how will we check in and know over time if we're being successful?
Right. So set very clear expectations up front once that project has been scoped out.
Right. And on the flip side, another really good question is, what would failure look like to you?
Yeah.
If this engagement wasn't going well, what would that look like? And most people don't want to, most practitioners don't want to ask that question because we're terrified to know. But isn't it great to know it up front?
Oh, yeah. And that's probably something the client really understands very well, sometimes even more so than what success is going to look like for them.
Vicky, you're absolutely right. I have found that the answer to the failure question comes faster than the answer to the success question. And that tells us an awful lot.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about determining your price and look a little more at writing winning proposals. We're talking with Amy Harcourt of Definitive Marketing, and you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. I can't even say my own name. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com. If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicky St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicky asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune in to our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Amy Harcourt, business and marketing consultant. She's the owner of Definitive Marketing. You're based down in San Francisco, right, Amy?
I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
But isn't it beautiful that you're based down in San Francisco, I'm up here in Seattle, and I have easy access to your work?
Yes, I'm like, thank goodness for the internet.
So I wanted to talk a little in this section. We've covered hourly rates versus value-driven pricing and touched a little on proposals or getting that information that we need to scope our project out up front. And it's so critical to spend that time up front with a client. How do we determine our price? You give a great example in your article about a friend who's a fitness trainer. Mm-hmm. And but I wanted, and we kind of touched on that a little, but I wanted to just say, or look at, how do I compare myself with my competitors? Do I look at what the market's doing? I know people who do both. I know people who are avid competitor watchers, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. others who don't, or who could not tell you anything, and yet they're still very successful. So what's your advice on that?
I think it's a combination of all of those things. I do think that it's important to, with every client or potential client, think about, what are their alternatives? You know, what they're trying to accomplish. What if they don't hire me, where else are they going to go? And it could range from doing it on their own, hiring somebody else, not doing anything. So it is important to know sort of what's the lay of the land in terms of the market and what they charge. But that's only one, honestly, small piece of it. A lot of it has to do with seeing if you have a good fit. What is it that you're really trying to accomplish? How would I help you do that? What's the value you would ascribe to that? And I don't mean in a kind of like, you know, tell me what you'd pay for this kind of way, but more like, you know, what does this mean to you? You know, accomplishing your goals. And then figuring out, like, what will it take for me to actually do this job? So you do begin to look at your own time and your own internal assessment of what value you place on that. But it isn't, I wouldn't then turn that into, I'm going to work for you X number of hours and this is what it would cost. But it's a combination of weighing all the factors of what needs to get done, what will it take for me to do it, what's the perceived value from the client's perspective, and what are their alternatives. And then coming up with a price based kind of on all of those things, and then kind of testing it. Where does it fit in the market? Is it on the high side, low side?
Mm-hmm.
What's the receptivity of the client? And then going from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know some people who actually lowered their fees during or after the recession. Is that something you'd advocate?
That's my next article, Vicki.
Oh.
Discounting. I think the title is going to be Discounting Will Be Your Slow Death. And what I mean by that is discounting simply for the sake of, I'm just going to lower the price to get the business, is one of the worst business mistakes we can make, because it's then impossible to raise the rate from there. A better strategy is to take what you do and try to break it down into like benefits and features, try to break it down into pieces and apply dollar amounts to that, so that if you have a client who's really price sensitive or the market has gone a bit soft, you can say, here's what this costs, but if you have a budget issue here, let's look at what can you afford and how could we begin taking some things off the table and thereby reducing the price.
Right. Right. I totally 100% agree with you that. And, you know, a lot of companies will tell you they don't have money. Don't believe them.
Exactly. Exactly.
They're just leveraging they're trying to take advantage.
That's right. And so what happens when you break it apart and then you begin taking value off the table because mm-hmm. they said they only had X to spend, it's amazing how they'll then find money to say, but I really want that piece. Okay, that one's important. Bring that back on the table. I'll find the money for that. That one's important. And it's amazing how you'll often get back to the full price option that you would have started with.
Mm.
Because you're working with them collaboratively, and they appreciate that.
Yes, definitely. Now, you've written this great article called Winning Proposals, Getting More Yeses. I know somebody who writes horrendously long proposals, very detailed.
Yes.
But in my opinion, pitches them before the client's ready to say yes, because inevitably they come back as a no.
Right.
It's so critical knowing when the client is ready to buy and when it's ready to put your proposal together. Give us some guidelines, if you would, based on your experience.
I will. You really just hit the nail on the head. It is all about timing. And the timing is really around, how much have you really had a conversation? How much discovery have you done with this potential client where you really fully understand not just what it is they need, but why they need it and the subtleties of it, and how is it really going to impact whether it's their bottom line for a company or their own personal, you know, sort of quality of life bottom line if it's more of a consumer-based service or product. But if you haven't done the discovery well enough, the proposal is never going to sell them. You want to leave that meeting or series of meetings or conversations before you do the proposal having a really solid sense that you two have a perfect fit, and now it's just a matter of documenting that with the proposal to confirm it in writing so that you can then move forward with really clear expectations.
Mm. Is this something you should always put in a proposal? Is this something you should never put in a proposal?
That's a great question. There's something, there's so many things.
There are a lot of things that have to go in.
there's so many things. You just have to be very clear about expectations, that you both are on the same page in terms of understanding the need, what the service is going to be or what the products are and the details of that and pricing in terms of, all those typical things.
Mm.
Here's
one I like that you mentioned in the article. I'm actually going to point listeners who want to read the article over to your site in just a moment. But you talk about value, and you say most of us are afraid to include a statement of value in the proposal, largely because we're unsure of it. And, are we going to put our feet on the fire by including it in there?
Yeah. It is the cornerstone to a really good proposal. And most proposals don't include it. So, yeah, it's a really important piece to include, and it really says to the client, I completely understand what you're trying to accomplish here. What is the value? And when we say what is the value, it takes their objectives, whatever those might be, and it quantifies them, and then you're reporting back to them. If we're successful with this engagement, I think that, I'll use an example of someone launching a new conference. If we're successful with this engagement in marketing your conference online, you will sell to capacity, which is 250 tickets. Your sponsors will be pleased, and they'll re-up, and that will mean $800,000 more, secured for next year, XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it's so important is because when you show them the value, and remember, all you're doing is mirroring back what they told you. You're not making these things up. This is what they have told you in the discovery phase. When you lay it back out to them, if we're successful, these things will happen, just as you, laid out for me.
Yeah.
And when it comes to looking at your fees are infinitesimal compared to the dollar value and even the intangible kinds of value that aren't tied to dollars that they're going to receive.
Right. And again, you set that expectation that we are a partnership here. If we fail, it's because we are not on the right track.
Yes, and I've even included in that article suggested language that says, while I can't guarantee that we'll meet these quantifiable objectives, I can promise that, I will, fulfill on all the things we've discussed in this proposal, and by doing so, we increase our odds together of achieving the kind of success we've just laid out.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a little bit of a caveat there, but it's a very reasonable and rational one.
Right. Great information that you've shared with us today, Amy. I really appreciate you
with
us. What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you were first starting out as a marketing consultant? I like to stunt you right at the end.
Yes. Here it is, that there is never a shortage of good ideas. And as a marketing consultant, it's all about my expertise. And giving that away always will draw new and more and better clients to me. Mm. And I'm not sure I understood that 11 years ago, but that give it away, because there's never a shortage. People will want to hire you if you really share your ideas and expertise.
Yeah, give to get marketing.
Give to get, exactly. Yep. Givers receive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I do appreciate you being with us today. Where can listeners find out more about you and some of these great articles that you've written?
Best place is probably on my website, which is definitivemarketing.com.
Okay, so definitivemarketing.com. You can find out more about Amy Harcourt, business and marketing consultant. And I know you're very busy, so I appreciate you taking the time out to be with us and share all of this information with our listeners today, Amy.
Thank you, Vicki. It was such a pleasure.
And please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Joyce Chapman, dream activist and coach. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-8255. 2500.
Looking for new ways to find light, love, healing, and balance in your life, your family, and your work? You're not alone. I'm Jeanette Dames, host of The Soul's Edge, Tuesdays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And I want to help you bring your life back to life. Listen to nourish your life or call for an angel reading. Join me on The Soul's Edge, Tuesdays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for joining us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. If you have comments or questions on any of our shows, we want to hear from you. Email info@conversationslive.net, call Vicki toll-free at 800-495-7617, that's 800-495-7617, or leave a message at our special listener voicemail box, 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. There's that music. Must be Joyce Chapman.
I like that.
Well, those of you who listen regularly know that Joyce Chapman is a dream activist and coach. And she's dedicated her life to helping people reach out for their dreams. She's certainly met quite a lot of her own dreams, and I'm sure she's still got more to go. She's a lifelong educator and coach and the author of several books that have been around for a long, long time, many years, including Live Your Dream, Journaling for Joy, and Notice and Journal. And she's been a regular on Conversations Live, answering your questions. And today we're going to talk about U-turns. Joyce didn't want to know what we were going to talk about, so we're doing this very spontaneously, right, Joyce? Welcome to the show.
I can't wait. I'm sitting on the edge of my chair.
So we want to look today at what happens when life throws something at you and you need to put your dreams on hold for a while, or you need to, or you realize that, you know, maybe you're walking down a road that no longer works for you. That happens too. And I have some questions here for you. I'm going to begin with one from Erica, who says, for 9 years, I lived in New York and Boston and built a career as a magazine editor. After my boyfriend and I separated, I decided to move west. Doesn't everybody, right? And I got a temporary job as an editor with a large corporation. That temporary job turned into 4 years, and I feel I've backed myself into a corner. I hate my job editing corporate documents. It's so dull, I feel like screaming every day, and I've been considering moving back east again. But the kind of publishing job I used to have is disappearing fast. My skills are no longer as hot as they used to be, and I'm shocked to find out that I'm definitely not in demand. Isn't that a shock when we find that out? She says, I feel like making a whole new start, new city, new life, new career, but I don't even know where to begin. Is there a glimmer of hope? Yes, there is, right? There's always hope.
I am really excited to hear this question and to answer it. It's just like, oh, please call me. Let's get together and re-spark, because that's what I think, you know, needs to happen sometimes. We just have to, you know, become re-enlivened and re-spark ourselves. And it sounds like, you know, that's exactly where she is now.
Mm-hmm. And so how's she going to get some of that? I just went on a trip, and I took a long time off because when I came back, I didn't want to work. I have a book that I could have been writing, and I just chose to take an extra week and a bit off when I came back because I felt I needed that space. But having taken that space, I feel much more excited about the projects that I've been working on and ready to get back to them. I think sometimes we have to take that space. So what are other ways that people can get rejuvenated and refreshed and look at things differently? Because we do get trapped in this cycle, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Very definitely. And I think it's time for, you know, when you're in a transition period, when you know that you want to change or shift or, make a new move, whether it's to the East Coast or the West Coast. It's like time to really do in-depth self-inventory. And it sounds like, oh, my gosh, do I really have to do that? And I excitedly say yes, because maybe it's time to get to re-know yourself, reacquaint yourself. And, you know, this person that says this question is, it's like she may have put something on hold a long time ago, but now it's time to get that back out and shake it out, so to speak, and get started again. So I say the first step with a change, with taking a close look at yourself, is like, okay, who am I? Where do I want to go? Asking all kinds of questions to just, you know, get into exactly who you want to be and what you want to accomplish this lifetime.
Yeah. You're fading off a little there, Joyce. What was the last bit?
But just who you want to be this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, who do I want? The wonderful question that thousands of people ask all the time, who do I want to be when I grow up?
Yeah.
You know, If this isn't who I want to be, who do I want to be?
Yeah. And sometimes making a new start and sometimes moving to a new place even can, mm-hmm. even just reorganizing your house can make a huge difference sometimes. Just moving stuff around, shaking things up.
Uh-huh. The shaking up is very important. It's like, and starting new. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, go to bed at night and say, okay, I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and I'm going to start all new.
Mm-hmm.
And it may sound facetious, but it really works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, what do I want to do first today? You know, if you always turn on the computer, maybe you want to change that and get your, or take a walk first, or dance to some music in your living room. You know, just making those changes and shifts, because it's time to, and I love all the re-words, renew herself in this case.
I remember interviewing somebody a long time ago, and he said, he was a psychiatrist, and he said one of the best ways for us to start shaking things up on a personal level is something so simple we can all incorporate it into our daily lives. If you're right-handed and brush your teeth with your right hand, brush them with a left hand. Move the stuff around in the bathroom so you don't just automatically reach for the toothbrush or the hairbrush or whatever it is. And it can be kind of aggravating when you do that, because, but it makes you realize how much we do on autopilot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's just like, and it's just such a habit. One of the things that I love to assist people with, and myself too, it's like, okay, what new habit do I want to add now?
Right.
You know, and if a person is looking at a big life change, and, you know, we're changing, our society is changing, old ways are just not going to work anymore. So mm-hmm. it's like, okay, if I can be brand new, what is it, the brand new me going to be like?
Mm.
And start fresh. And also, Vicki, very important to get several people that will, you know, encourage you, empower you, cheer you on, so to speak, because sometimes we need that.
Okay, so look at who we're surrounding ourselves with and the kind of environment we're surrounding ourselves with, as well as the people. I wanted to get this question in today, because this is actually from a guy, and he said he got laid off last year, which hurt our family financially. Can't read today. We almost lost our home, but I managed to find a job. It was way below my experience and salary level, and we pulled through. However, after struggling so hard for 18 months, I've lost my confidence. I know I should go back. I know I should be trying to get a better position in my old field, but I feel lost. How do I pull myself back up and through the black hole? How do I get my confidence back? As a dream coach, how do you work with somebody who's lost their confidence like that? That's a big thing.
A very simple question that sometimes restarts again, as we were talking about shaking up, is just to say, well, what do you do well? You know, what are your strengths? What are your talents? This is a great question to ask all the time. If you had all the money in the world, what would you really want to do? So it's like coming from that spirit self, is the way I perceive it. Coming from that energy self, the alive you, not the person that walks around like, woe is me. Because
mm-hmm.
if we get into, and I say we, and I include myself, if you become a victim, you cripple. And it's very important, you know, to step out of that place and say, okay, it's time. When I was doing workshops, I used to pass out the button that said, I'm living my dream, ask me how. And we had to wear them around for a month. And it was just such a fun, experiment and experience, because it's like, okay, so if he puts on, and I love guy questions, if he puts on his button that says, I'm living my dream, ask me how, you know, he may really find out that he has a lot of changing and new adventures to embrace now.
Mm. Okay, well, that might be worth trying, and at least it'll get
some
conversation starting. And, I apologize for calling him a guy, but he wanted to be a non. He just put a non, but I do know he's male because of some other stuff that he put in the question there.
Well, one of the things that I'm just going to respond to that, Vicki, because it's like, I have had people ask me over the years, do men come to dream coaches, you know? Do guys ask it? I go, oh, of course they do. You know, we kind of have in my opinion, we have a mindset that women like to do self-growth things more than men, and I don't find that true at all.
No, I know quite a few. I'm looking at one across the way from me, Mr. Eric Ryder, who has a few dreams of his own. Well, Joyce, I thank you as always for being with us. Always a pleasure talking with you. And tell me one exciting thing that's happening to you this week before I let you go.
Well, I woke up this morning and I didn't turn on the computer.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a good one. And where can listeners find out more about you, Joyce?
Go to my website is the easiest way, because all the good stuff that I'm involved in is on there. And it's simply my name, joycechapman.com. And I've got blogs and question and answer places and all sorts of ways to interact.
And I know that you welcome questions from listeners. So, again, let's have an email address for you. It's dreams@joycechapman.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
dreams@joycechapman.com. Drop her an email, no obligation. And let's see what happens.
Well,
thanks for being with us. And before we go today, I just want to welcome Eric Ryder back from another vacation.
Thank you. It's good to be home.
Did you have a good time? It's good to be home.
Yes, yeah. It was all right. I just went and saw some family, so it wasn't exactly, Mardi Gras or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do we have the pleasure of your company for the next few weeks at least?
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
All right, because I know I won't be taking a vacation for a long time.
Well, you had that nice month off, so.
I did. And it kind of crept a little because my new project wasn't ready to to pick up. So it crept into an extra week or maybe even two. So that was very nice. But I'm back at it full force right now. So Valerie did a great job while you were gone. I just wanted to let you know that.
Fantastic.
And
she can keep her job then.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week with an all new program. And I want to let you know how you can reach us at the show. You can listen to podcasts of former shows, past shows, at conversationslive.net. It's a net, not com, conversationslive.net. And if you have suggestions for upcoming show topics or guests that you'd like to hear on the show, always feel free to let me know that, because we want to bring you what you want to hear. Conversationslive.net, and you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net. We also have a toll-free number, and that's 800-495-7617. 800-495-7617. And again, always feel free to drop me a line or just leave a quick voicemail message for us. And appreciate you being with us today, and we'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Oh, you know what? I've got one little quick quote I want to share. We've got time, haven't we, before I go today?
Because
I really
time.
Liked this.
Fantastic.
It's from Nathaniel Hawthorne, and he said, happiness is a butterfly, which when pursued is always just beyond our grasp, but which, if you will sit down quietly, may alight upon you. I loved that, because that's just like butterflies, right? Yeah. Okay, we're gone. Live well, live strong. See you next week.